Welcome to the Freedom to Rise podcast, a production of United Way Suncoast. Here's your host, Bronwyn Batal.
In the musical Alexander Hamilton, the title character laments that he has to holler just to be heard. It's a lyric that may resonate with nonprofits who choose to engage in advocacy, especially as our nation's political discourse grows more divisive. But as Hamilton declared, nonprofits are not throwing away their shot to advocate and influence public policy. Tonight, we'll welcome the CEO of a Suncoast nonprofit who is bound and determined to take her shot to help the women of Sarasota and Manatee counties. But first, this message from United Way Suncoast.
United Way Suncoast's Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, or VITA as we call it, is ready for another tax season. VITA is vital because it helps thousands of low and mid-income community members get a return on their taxes without having to pay a preparer. It's free, and our IRS-certified volunteers love to assist people. Over the last 2 years, our VITA program has returned more than $20 million to our region in the form of tax returns and earned income tax credits. Make an appointment to see a VITA volunteer at uwsvita.org. For more information, you can call 1-833-UWS-VITA. That's 1-833-897-8482. And remember, united we rise, united we win.
Welcome back. Advocacy represents a cornerstone of our work at United Way Suncoast. We believe government plays a critical role in creating change that can improve people's lives. But government cannot do it alone. Neither can United Way and the rest of our nonprofit sector. Tonight, we're joined by a woman who shares that perspective. It's interesting that she once worked as a production manager for the Ohio Transformer Plant in Palmetto, because in her current role, she's managed an impactful nonprofit, produced a lot of success stories, and transformed the lives of thousands of women. She enters her 20th year as the CEO of the Women's Resource Center, an organization dedicated to providing direction to women of all generations by inspiring, educating, and supporting them through life's transitions. I am so pleased to welcome my friend and colleague, Ashley Brown, to the Freedom to Rise podcast. Ashley, thank you for joining us for this discussion.
Thank you for having me. And what a brilliant intro. Well done, Bronwyn. That was clever.
It's timely because Hamilton is in town. So I'm not doing this as a PSA, but there are some correlations to advocacy and Hamilton. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Ashley, the Women's Resource Center does so much, and we certainly want to focus on your mission. But first, we also wanted to talk about the advocacy role that's become a part of that mission. Last March, the Sarasota County Commission committed $25 million in federal pandemic relief funds to affordable housing. The decision came after a group of nonprofits strongly recommended that the commission increase its allotment. Gulf Coast Community Foundation, the Charles and Marjorie Baranczyk Foundation, and the Women's Resource Center were all present. What was that day like?
It was really fantastic on a lot of levels. And when we talk about the advocacy work, I think I just want to start by saying I feel a responsibility, and I think we feel a responsibility at the center to speak on behalf of our clients who don't have the opportunity often to be in front of legislators or have that voice. So I think that's why we feel so strongly to be at the table, so to speak, to share their perspective. And the energy in the room on that particular day, because as a group, we built a cross-sector collaboration. So not only did we have the powerhouses of the Community Foundations, Barancic, Gulf Coast, Sarasota, we also had the head of the EDC. We had the head of the Gulf Coast Builders Exchange. We had Sarasota Memorial Hospital, recognizing that it is a community issue, not just a single sector issue, was really valuable. And building the communication and the coalition of having that cross sector speak out, I think was really valuable in getting movement with the commissioners. I think that the statement on how many emails were received as well, I think over 100 emails and 100 kind of unique emails. Oftentimes you get just a, here's what we want you to say, send it. But everybody had their own message because so many people had been impacted by the housing crisis, losing employees, having to move. I mean, just there's a laundry list. So I think it just really showed, Bronwyn, that when we work together collaboratively to raise our voice around an issue, we can facilitate change or facilitate, let's go back to the table. Maybe we weren't thinking in the right direction the first time. So,
yeah. Something about we, the people.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that came in.
And we did have one of our clients who's part of the Community Foundation of Sarasota 2Gen program speak. And she's a client that's working hard. And actually, she's graduated since then, which is amazing. But her rent increased $1,000 a month. And, you know, we have conversations about, you just have to save and you just have to do the right things and pull yourselves up by the bootstraps. We can have a whole podcast.
Not a favorite comment.
No. But you cannot plan for a 50% increase in your basic living expense. I mean, it's just untenable. So, you know, I think that looking at how do we address this, or our community will go in a direction that I don't think the majority of us want to see it go in.
Mm, absolutely. And it's something I was thinking about, and I can't remember where I heard it, but it was recently. It was less about us against them and more about how do we come together and be us against the problem? You know, what is that problem? And how do we come together with our various ideas and various viewpoints and ways of seeing the world? And what I thought about as you were talking is that just must have felt awesome. Just to see that was a lot of work. It was intentional. It took a lot of time to get everybody together, to be there, have great discourse, and see that come out. Talk a little bit about that.
When the recommendation was made, and the initial recommendation was for about a $5 million allocation. And then the final recommendation was a $25 million allocation. So it went from about 6% of the whole pie to about 30%, which was kind of more in line with what we were seeing in some other communities. I think that not only seeing that the commission and the planning committee saw the value in making this investment, but the organizations that work in affordable housing and fund affordable housing were able to put it towards units, increase of units, which was so important because it was going to help with long term, not just a short term. And then they would be permanently affordable, which I think that permanently affordable made a difference. And, you know, I think for those of us that work collectively on it, it gave a boost of, A, we can all work together from different points of view and in different sectors. We'll see how many times I can say sector.
But lots of times. It's okay.
That we can all work together from a different viewpoint with a common goal. And I like how you differentiated there's either a goal or an issue we're trying to solve. It's not about just the Women's Resource Center, or it's not about just one of the foundations, or it's really collectively what is the best for our community. So it was, that gives you hope.
Yes.
Right? It gives you hope that things can change in a positive way, that gives you the opportunity to look at what else do we need to be talking about?
So many things.
So many
things and challenging things. I mean, we don't always have to focus on the things that aren't going well. Sometimes it's a matter of augmenting things that are going well, mm-hmm. and making sure that we all understand that, mm-hmm. and not really separating the us and them with regard to, oh, they're legislators. They know things that we may, as regular people, don't know, may not know. But that's simply not always the case. It's up to us to advocate for our community, for our needs together.
Well, and Bronwyn, I want to dig in there a little bit, because you were exactly right. And I have found our local legislators to be interested and engaged in learning about different issues or opportunities. So even though we don't necessarily always agree on the topics that we're bringing forward, they're always willing to listen and they're always willing to learn. And if it's a topic that they're not familiar with, open to us sending more information or digging deeper into it. So I think we're really fortunate with our local representation, and even topics, equal pay for women and things that are certainly not universally across the board on everyone's platform. So I think we're really fortunate in that regard. So I would encourage people to reach out to the legislators to make appointments and get on their schedule for, it's going to be 15 minutes. It's not, you're not going to have lunch in an hour, but you're going to have time to kind of state your case and or your concern. And, you know, I think we're really fortunate in that regard that they do take the time to listen.
Absolutely. Hallmark of our democracy.
Yes.
Is being able to have civic and civil discourse.
Yes.
And we started the podcast with a reference to the musical Hamilton. To bring that up again. And one of the more famous lines from the film revolves around Aaron Burr telling Alexander Hamilton to talk less and smile more. And no, as women, we're not really happy with that comment. But when it comes to advocacy, there may be some who suggest nonprofits need to talk less and smile more. What's your message to those who may think that?
Great question. I think it's really about the messaging. And certainly you touched on the political divisiveness and the just nastiness that kind of is in our political world today. Mm-hmm. And I think an opportunity that we all have is to move beyond that and truly get to the heart of the matter.
Yes.
And I'm going to switch to a different topic that we advocated on, if it's to kind of bring this message home from me, which was the Benefit Cliff advocacy yes. work that we did.
So important. And
it really, we started having those conversations. On the Benefit Cliffs are social programs that people are on. Maybe it's childcare subsidies is one of the biggest ones, that if you're in a certain income, you would get help with quality childcare. And if you are working and start to make a little more money, it's an off-on switch. There's not that gradual reduction. So we have the opportunity to see this in action with clients all the time. And being able to share the impact and the message with our legislators through a truly bipartisan approach made a huge difference. Because when you lay it out in very non-emotional, here's the issue, it was unanimously, this doesn't make any sense, and we should look at this. So it was actually our local delegation that led the put the bill forward that passed a couple of years ago, which was great. So there's work happening on that. But it was Senator Mike Bennett, local, our supervisor of elections in Manatee County, was integral with working with us on sharing this message, willing to stand up for it. So again, I think bringing different parties together, different sectors, to have a common message about change that needs to happen. And I think our nonprofit community has a unique voice because we're dealing with the clients that are often impacted by the policies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that we do have a unique opportunity to put their voice at the table through us. So that's my opinion.
Yes, no, absolutely. And some of that is just can't get away from work to be able to do it. Other mm-hmm. aspects of that is, oh, come along with us. Let's bring everybody along and get some training in how to do this so that you feel comfortable raising your voice and advocating for yourself as well. Women's Resource Center is really good about that as well. Just training mm-hmm. And coming alongside of until we're comfortable. And certainly there's a risk of alienating elected officials or even board members or donors who see maybe an issue differently. How does the Women's Resource Center manage those and other inherent risks to advocacy?
So it's interesting. We have a really terrific and engaged board of directors, and we have a public policy committee, and we have a consultant that we work with, Deborah Chapman, who is really
fantastic.
And she does a wonderful job, one, researching and getting all of the policy pieces and bringing the different voices together, and outlines plans beautifully. So really, I need to give her full credit for the work.
Absolutely. You're super smart, Deborah Chapman.
Right.
Super smart.
Yeah, she's not going to be happy with us with that, Bronwyn.
But no, she isn't.
We're saying it anyway. But so our board of directors and our leadership team at the center, which I also have a fantastic leadership team, we talk about the issues that we feel are important to the clients we serve and put our voice behind the topics that impact women and families and their ability to live a fully successful, financially stable life, which is what we want for our clients. You know, the ones that are not always popular, we still present, but we present with language of the why. So why is it important? Does it tie to women and families in our region? And if it does, we feel very comfortable in standing behind our efforts, knowing that there could be some unpopular feelings on certain topics. And we've also learned that the equal pay is a perfect example of we've changed our messaging on that a bit to say we want to expand the number of women that are earning a living wage in our region. Because really, it's about the ability to earn a living wage. So what's keeping them from earning a living wage? And if there is an equal pay thing, then we need to address it. But it's really, what are the things that need to be in place to help expand the number of women earning a living wage and a family supporting wage?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we do.
Not earning a living wage, you're not working. You're right. Struggling to make ends meet. You're not spending. How's that impacting our economy?
Right.
We really need to be in the workforce. So
yes.
Don't get me fired up. This
Ooh.
Is terrific. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for that incredible advocacy work that you do. I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
Talk about you.
Oh.
So hang on. So let's talk about how you came to be the CEO of Women's Resource Center. I already mentioned that your job with the Ohio Transformer in Palmetto. I had no idea before this podcast, but it's worth noting that you were the first female production manager in a transformer facility in the United States. That's huge. But when the company was sold in 2002, you found yourself out of work.
Yes.
First female transformer in the United States out of work in 2002. Tell us about the transition you made to the Women's Resource Center.
I will. And I have to give credit again. It was my husband who pointed out to me that I was the first female production manager, which I'm like, oh my gosh,
thank
I never
you, husband.
Thought about it.
Yes.
Way to go, Jim. But wait,
way to go, Jim.
It's a nice thing. So, and I love to tell this story about losing my job because it was absolutely a situation that transitions to, well, I can make anything about the Women's Resource Center, but this really does work. That it was a situation where I was working. I was successful in my job, great reviews, progressed, and was fired when a new company came in. Just because. So no reason, no cause. And, you know, Florida's a right to work state. And so really it was a moment to say, do I sit in this anger or disbelief or this isn't fair and blah, 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 you know, all of those things, or do you recognize that things in life will happen that either by choice or by situation that we are not anticipating and we have to move through them. So, you know, I think that one, I recognized I really didn't love what I was doing. It was not my passion, but you make good money in manufacturing. And when you start making money, it's really hard to say, you know what? Is happiness in your job really important?
Right. Am I fulfilled enough? But there's food on the table. So,
right. So I kind of thank them for making that decision for me. And I wasn't really sure, Bron, what I wanted to do. I had started volunteering at the Women's Resource Center in 2001, maybe. Might have been 2000. And I was working on committees. I was teaching computer classes. I really, you know, enjoyed the mission. And there was a job opening at the center. And I thought, you know what? I love this work. I'm going to just try it. And it stuck. 20 yeah, years later.
It did. It did.
20 years later, it stuck.
Did you say 20? And I, yeah.
Right. It'll be 20. It is 20 this year, which is, I feel so fortunate I get to work in my avocation. So it's what I was meant to do. And so I'm very thankful for the new company that purchased it and decided to replace the upper management. So
yeah, there you go. It was a gift in hindsight.
In hindsight.
At the time, not feeling so much like that, but now in hindsight and the rest of us in this community, I know those that I know that know you are grateful.
Oh.
So we're glad you ended up where you are. Not ended up, chose to be where you are.
Me too.
So I'm guessing, and you know, that you draw a lot of inspiration from just your own personal experience. And how has that experience informed and influenced the current slate of programs offered at the center?
So there's a couple of things. And it's funny that you asked this question. So my very first thing is I am passionate about women's ability to take care of themselves.
Yes.
And to be fully engaged with their finances.
Yes.
That is kind of the foundation of, you know, everything that we do at the center is to remove barriers and help women and families. And we do serve men. I want to, let's get that out. So about 3%.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
I know 3% of our clients are male. So, and we can loop back to that. But in particular for women, the ability to earn a wage to support themselves and their families gives, and everybody should have the opportunity and the ability to work in a job that earns a living wage. But then all of your choices and decisions are based on what's best for you as an individual, not because, well, I'm going to have to stay in this situation because I don't have another choice. I don't have any options. The number of women who are in marriages that to every outside person seems great. And in mine, this is my personal story. My family growing up, we were the, I had two older brothers, parents, marriage intact, all was great. My mom worked in the family business, so would never take a paycheck or get a W-2 because why would you need to do that? Because that's, well, my parents got divorced after 35 years. And so here's my mom in her, you know, late 50s at this point, mid 50s maybe. And looking at her future with certainly was able to get alimony in that piece, but not permanent and not looking at, oh, her Social Security is completely tied to half of my father's Social Security. So helping women see and be invested in that aspect of their life of knowing how are they building assets? How are they building for their future? Is that is at the core of all of my passion for what we do and is informed with the programs. So, and if you look at our programs, whether it's career coaching or ask an attorney or ask a banker, women's money empowerment, mental health counseling that I think we'll talk about a little later, having access to information and the tools to build those is just, see, you've gotten me on my soapbox.
I do. And it makes me want to say, so for those of you who are listening, if you do not get the Women's Resource Center email update, their newsletter, it's one of the more interesting email newsletters that I get. So, and I'm not saying that just because you're here and looking at me on this podcast, it is really one of those that I do take a minute to read and enjoy. I also feel very passionately about your mission. So that's maybe part of it, but I don't want to take anything away from how can they get that newsletter?
They can go online to mywrc.org. And I think there's a very easy link that they can fill out. And I have to give a shout out to Ann Carter, who every week works at putting together a really diverse set of resources and opportunities and beautiful quotes.
It's inspiring.
I know. So
that's one of the reasons why I like it. So yes, thanks for bringing that part of it up. Yes.
I know. They just make you feel better.
Yeah, they do. So it goes without saying that women have always and continue to face unique challenges in our society. And you talked about it a little bit earlier and you said, we might talk about this later. I don't know. There's a lot of forethought there. Talk about the critical role the center plays in helping them deal with those challenges, especially mental health counseling.
Yeah. So when the Women's Resource Centers of Manatee and Sarasota started independently and we merged, we're going into the seventh year of our merger, which is awesome.
Congratulations.
But it really was started at a time that women were going through divorce, loss of a spouse, and there was that segment of the population that didn't qualify for public assistance, but didn't have enough financial means to access the supports they needed. So when we were looking at like the career coaching and that component of what transferable skills do you have from what you might be doing as a homemaker or raising your kids, there's tons of transferable skills to a job. If you were always the treasurer on the PTA, right? It's
there you go.
That's what you're going to do. So as we were working on, you know, the basics of kind of your skills and how are you going to put a resume together? How are you going to put yourself back out into the job market? The recognition of mental health counseling and the need for it to move through situational depression, everything that comes with change, stress, which has only been exacerbated as time has gone on, and having access to mental health counseling is not readily available. If you have insurance, it's sometimes hard to find counselors that take insurance. And if you don't have insurance, it's expensive. And so making affordable mental health counseling available through the gift of some wonderful counselors that certainly volunteer a big portion of what they could be paid in their private practice to make that service available. And it's one of the biggest programs at the center. We do really, we try to do short-term focused solution-based therapy. So I want to get through this transition, or, you know, I find I'm struggling with communication in my family that's causing stress and I need some coping mechanisms and some help with framing conversations. Two, we have some clients who do longer term because they're really working through issues that take a little longer. So our counseling is available on a sliding scale. The most it is $50 for couples counseling, which that's where some of our men come in. And it goes all the way down to $5. So everybody can have access to counseling. And I am such a firm believer in accessing the support you need with, you know, through a good counselor, you can really make significant changes in your world.
Absolutely. Not usually a fan of the now more than ever phrase, because mm-hmm. I just think life evolves. Mm-hmm. However, I think it applies, you know, with the disasters, with COVID, with so many things that have piled on to our families and women in our community. That's a wonderful service. Thank you very much for that. And thank you to the counselors who are giving up their time and talent.
And our funders that support.
And your funders.
And our funders. And Bronwyn, one thing that I just want to throw out as well is when we talk about additional stressors, mm-hmm. caregiving, the yes. role that women play in caregiving it's unbelievable in terms of the sandwich generation of having parents and kids and managing that and managing it on limited resources. It is the upcoming crisis that I think we're going to find ourselves in, that we know it's there, but I think it's just going to continue to grow.
Thank you for raising that. You're absolutely right. And we just, and this is not the kind of caregiving you're talking about, but we just elevated the childcare crisis in our community. So if you're a woman and you're taking care of family and you don't have affordable quality childcare for your children, you know, that again, we go back to who's in the workforce. How are we handling that as a community and how does that impact our economy? So I'm glad that you elevated the conversation around caregiving as well.
Absolutely. So
that should be for another podcast.
We need another podcast.
I knew we would.
I know. And it's not intentional. Like, I am a firm believer, even with policy, there's such unintended consequences of all of it. But do you have the right voices at the table when you're working on some of the policy changes?
Absolutely. So. Yep. We're exploring that just as United Way. Do we have the right voices at the table for everything we do mm-hmm. in every space? And making sure that that is the case, because it's so important to be us, mm-hmm. not us and them.
Yes.
So Ashley, I appreciate your advocacy, the center's continued partnership with United Way Suncoast, and the time you've given us for this episode. Is there anything I didn't think to ask you about?
No, I think we covered it and then some. And I want to thank you and United Way Suncoast, who is a great partner to the Women's Resource Center and so many agencies in our community. And I think is intentional about how are we working together and collaborating. And it's needed and it's appreciated. So thank you for the opportunity to be here.
And thank you. Thank you. There's thank yous all around them. They're well heartfelt. So I'm so glad you were here. I'm going to send you on your ways. But this was such a great conversation and I appreciate you and the Women's Resource Center.
Thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Now it's time for the big takeaway. We started the podcast speaking of Hamilton, a musical about two figures from American history who desperately wanted to leave their mark and create a legacy. At United Way Suncoast, we offer people a chance to make a mark in the community. Our advocacy efforts provide the opportunity to not only influence governmental decisions, but to help us convene stakeholders and create collaborative efforts to make a difference. If you care about early learning, literacy, youth success, or financial stability, you can play a role in elevating our efforts. United Way Suncoast is positioned to not only advocate, but to amplify the singular voices that want to help. Our focus on the housing crisis has not only helped people stay in their homes, but we brought together local emergency rental assistance program managers to increase cross-county collaboration. And we've taken the lead on providing information and resources to those who need help or want to help with our housing crisis dashboard. Similarly, we are shining the light on an emerging childcare crisis in our community, in our country. The lack of quality, accessible, affordable childcare impacts women and businesses and is of importance to everyone. If you don't want to throw away your shot to create a meaningful legacy and want to learn more about these efforts, visit UnitedWaySuncoast.org. Do that today. Because united we rise, united we win. Onward.